Welcome to the 330th edition of Money Matters, the Cost of Everything. I think it's actually 230. I think I got a typo there. 230th edition of Money Matters, the Cost of Everything is today's show. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, KVMR, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another, whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it. It controls our country, our economy, our planet in some way or another. It controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. It's about our lives and livelihood. In short, Money Matters is about you. How is everybody today? Well, okay, so last month and a half, seven shows. We brought no negative news about the market. Today, however, strikes up a theme we've seen before. Dow down 221 points to 17,494. So now what? The cost of everything? I don't know. We'll have to see. Let's take a look at what the news says about why stocks are doing what they're doing. This is out from AP by Marley J. about an hour ago. Today is April 7th, 2016, the year of our Lord. You may be listening to this show a day or two later on another station, one of your community radio stations. So welcome wherever you're listening to the show at. And of course, you can always send your emails to the program director at the station you're hearing the show at for comments or questions about the show. 12:11 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at this second. So New York out of AP picked up from financeyahoo.com this morning, taking a look at the market. Losses in banks and technology companies are leading the market. Oil prices are inching lower after jumping 5% yesterday. Stocks are on track for their third drop in 4 days. So what does that mean? Don't know. Specifically, the Dow down about 222 as I speak. S&P down about 26 points. NASDAQ down about 70 points. All 10 industrial sectors of the S&P 500 trading lower. Financial stocks took some of the largest losses, including Goldman Sachs, which slid about $4. And Charles Schwab slid about $1. Telecommunications lagged the rest of the market for the second day. Again, all this out of AP this morning. Verizon fell $1.29 about as far as an hour ago when this article came out. And eBay was the loser among tech stocks with a decline of about $1.17, somewhere around there. Minings and metal companies also struggled. However, gold is up today. Gold is sitting around what? $1,239.60 an ounce from Kitco. Kitco.com is where you can get those gold prices. And we're a few stocks up today. Wynn Resorts, gambling mecca, jumped $9 after they proposed a new development and want to build a recreational lake and hotel behind its Las Vegas property. And there's a joke I remember about a lake casino. Oh, I can't tell it. Anyway, brings back memories. Energy, crude oil fell 91 cents, about 36.84 barrel, and 38.96 in London. Used car dealership CarMax reported strong fourth quarter results. Stock still lost $3.79 as of an hour ago, or about 7%. Company said it faced tougher sales environments in the second half of the fiscal year. And Monster Boxer Superstore Costco fell after the company disclosed its March sales. Its stocks fell about 2.9%. And but on the bright side, Bed Bath & Beyond and Ollie's Bargain Hunting Outlet Holdings, Ollie's, both traded higher after they announced their quarterly results. And we already mentioned with gold, Hanes brand, I guess those are the underwear people, said it will buy Champion Europe. Hanes owns Champion, and the deal gives it control of a company that owned the Champion trademark in Europe now, as well as the Middle East and Africa. It made a similar deal in Japan just recently. The underwear, T-shirt, and sock maker added about $1. Conagra Foods added $1. They make Chef Boyardee, Hebrew National hot dogs, and other packaged foods. They reported third quarter profit and sales were stronger than expected. And application for unemployment benefits fell slightly last week, according to the Labor Department. That shows employers aren't slashing as many jobs, even though there are signs of economic growth is weak, so says FinanceYahoo.com. Overseas, we saw some hits. German index fell about 1%. France, about 0.9%. Britain's FTSE lost about 0.4%. Japanese stock advanced 0.2%. And Hong Kong, Hang Seng Index added 0.3%. And Korea's Seoul Kospi Index added 0.1%. U.S. government bonds rose. The yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note fell to 1.69%. Remember, when bond prices rise, yields fall. They move in opposite of each other. And the dollar continued to weaken against the yen, falling to 108.37 from 109.62. The dollar is at its lowest price compared to the yen in almost a year and a half. They do have a tendency to move opposite of each other, the yen and the U.S. dollar. Remember, when we used to be on a gold standard, we would measure the price of gold against the U.S. dollar, or vice versa, the price of dollar against gold. But now we're off the gold standard since 1972, somewhere around there. Now they measure it against other currencies, and the yen and the dollar can move in opposite of each other. And indeed, yesterday they did. And also out to by FinanceYahoo.com, the Fiscal Times by a Moshe Vardy. Earlier this morning, I did an article on this about jobs leaving because of robots. And a related topic to what I did came out from the Fiscal Times Business and the Economy, saying that the robot revolution could wipe out 5.1 million jobs by 2020. Wow. The article goes on to say by Millie Dent, if a plummeting stock market and possible global recession isn't enough to make you hide under the covers, a new report from the World Economic Forum just might. The fourth industrial revolution is already underway, and it's not looking too promising for your job, so says the Fiscal Times and the author Millie Dent. Over the next 5 years, automation and robots will eliminate 5.1 million jobs globally, according to the new report from the World Economic Forum. Findings are based on a survey of 15 economies that account for about 65% of the world's total workforce. Wow. The jobs that are most at risk, so they say, are office and administration roles, which are expected to be impacted by a perfect storm of technological trends, the report reads. The trends the report is referencing are the mobile internet, cloud technology, big data analytics, and the Internet of Things. Internet of Things like Internet of Everything, like controlling your washing machine from your iPhone. Other sectors that also stand to lose jobs include office and administrative, manufacturing and production. We've seen that for a long time. You know, in the machining, when they machine industrial parts, used to be a guy there on a lathe, you know, and turn metal. And I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, they came out with what was called a CNC machine, and it was a self-contained robotic machine that machined parts according to computer specs. So you could go on a computer screen, plug in the dimensions of, let's say, a shaft that you wanted to make or something else, and plug it in, and this machine, as long as you fed it the metal, would cut and cut and cut, and each one would be almost perfect. CNC machines. So they have replaced a lot of machinists in the manufacturing sector, and that will probably continue, as they say here in this article. Construction and extraction, installation and maintenance, and the arts and entertainment. I don't know how robots are going to replace the arts and entertainment. Maybe they're going to get robotic violin players? I don't know. Each industry will also face job losses, although the impact will vary considerably. The biggest negative losses will most likely occur in healthcare, thanks to the rise of telemedicine, followed by energy and financial services. Once again, that was out by the Fiscal Times. So there you go. And I did, you know, I followed that a long time ago. I did some articles and things on robots replacing humans. You know, the theory is, that the higher minimum wage goes, as you know, Governor Brown just signed a $15 minimum wage mandate in California. And of course, the opponents of that, of minimum wages, would say that the higher you raise the minimum wage, the more robots are going to be brought online. Robots don't need health care. They don't take sick leave. They need fixing occasionally. And so the higher the minimum wage goes, the more companies will be incentivized to add a robot and fire you. So that it would be a downside of minimum wage being raised. And remember, the other opponents of minimum wages say that as you raise minimum wages, more people will be fired. Those that remain at work will make more money, but those that are fired will go to the breadlines or to the SNAP cards or to the unemployment office, further putting strain on the public assistance programs. So there are two sides to every coin. I know there are a lot of people cheering on the $15 minimum wage increase, many people say that will just increase unemployment. I mean, look at it this way. Let's say I'm a business and I have $100,000 to pay my employees, and I pay them $10 an hour. Well, I could hire so many people before my $100,000 is used up. Now, if you double my minimum wage, I have to pay my employees to 15 or go up by 50%, not double, but 50%, then I basically, if I only have $100,000 to pay wages, then I have to let people go or raise my prices, right? And if I raise my prices, that's inflation. And higher prices means the people that got wage increases are going to have to pay more money to buy what they buy. And around in a vicious circle it goes, which is the reason why when I started working, I remember hearing minimum wages at 65 cents an hour. Anybody remember that? I don't remember that personally, but I remember it was 65 cents an hour. What I remember was $2.65. That still sticks in my craw. $2.65. And now we're in, at least in California, in a couple of years, we'll be at $15 an hour. And I bet in 10 or 20 years, they're going to be calling for higher minimum wages, because it's kind of this vicious circle. The more you raise minimum wages, increases the cost of business, and they have to raise their prices, and that means everybody else raises their prices, and that means your $15 that you get an hour won't go quite as far in the future, and then you're going to need to raise them again. Kind of a vicious cycle. That's what inflation does. It kind of erodes away the standards of the working class in favor of those that can protect themselves with assets. Remember, if I hold a lot of stocks or real estate or something tangible, and inflation takes off. Inflation usually carries with it the prices of every other asset. The only thing that doesn't go up in inflation is a dollar in your pocket. So if inflation comes along, the dollar in your pocket doesn't really become worth more. But everything you own that's not a dollar does become more valuable when priced in dollars. And so might give you an idea what to hold in case you think there's inflation coming. You know, most people would agree that holding cash in an inflationary environment is a losing proposition because it's losing purchasing power. And holding anything but cash in an inflationary environment will help protect you, because the only thing that's really inflating or deflating in value actually is the dollar itself. So I'll give you an idea. Remember, we always have to be clear why we own an asset. And most people use cash as mediums of exchange, and also so they won't lose money. Some people will say, I don't want to be in the stock market. I just want to put money in the bank, keep it in cash. Those people are there for their reason of safety and not necessarily protection against loss of purchasing power. Loss of purchasing power is only applicable to the dollar that's being inflated. So there are reasons to hold both for sure. And you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll play a brief respite of music, and then we'll be right back. My name's Mark Gunabrody. Stay tuned to your community radio station. And you're tuned to your community radio station, Money Matters, edition 230, entitled The Cost of Everything. And yeah, how much does everything cost today? Anyway, as you know, FBI and the feds were after Apple to unlock their iPhones so they could get in. But out of Los Angeles AFP today, March 29th was the date of this article, Los Angeles. The FBI was successful in unlocking the iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino terror attackers. That ended a legal standoff with Apple that had pitted U.S. authorities against Silicon Valley. How did you feel about that? By the way, phone numbers in the booth here, 530-265-9555, 530-265-9555. I'll take calls anytime during the show today. It's a call-in show. If you're listening to this outside of another day of April 7th, 2016, 12:28 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, you can't call in. You'll be listening to other people that do call in. 530-265-9555. So your questions. Apple had been backed by a broad coalition of technology giants, such as Google and Facebook. They were fiercely opposed to using government mandates in unlocking the iPhone on grounds that it would have wide-reaching implications on digital security and privacy. The key court hearing scheduled earlier in that month to hear arguments from both sides in the sensitive case was abruptly canceled after the FBI said it no longer needed Apple's help because it had found an outside party to unlock the phone. That's interesting to me. the feds would give up. Even though they found somebody, you would think that they would want to continue to pursue the fact that they want to be able to unlock all the phones, right? But I don't know. Was it political pressure or what was it? It's interesting. Interesting. U.S. Attorney Eileen Decker said, quote, our decision to conclude the litigation was based solely on the fact that with the recent assistance of a third party, name not mentioned, we are now able to unlock that iPhone without compromising any information on the phone. Without compromising any information on the phone. Oh, in other words, when they opened it, it didn't destroy the information. Okay. I could open an iPhone with a hammer, but then I guess that would destroy the information, right? In a court filing, it asked that the case be dismissed. Prosecutors said the U.S. government had, quote, successfully accessed the data stored on Farouk's iPhone and therefore no longer requires assistance from Apple. It was unclear and not mentioned who helped the FBI access the phone and what was stored on the device. News reports have said, so says this article, that the FBI may have sought assistance from an Israeli forensics company. Oh, wow, okay. They declined to say who it was, of course. Yeah. And I also went on to say, while we continue to explore the contents of the iPhone and other evidence, these questions may not be fully resolved. But I'm satisfied we have access to more answers than we did before, and the investigative process is moving forward. Apple, meanwhile, said the FBI should never have been brought before the courts and us, and that the company would continue to increase the security of its product. Apple believes deeply, quote, that people in the United States and around the world deserve data protection, security, and privacy. Sacrificing one for the other only puts people in countries at greater risk. All right. Tech companies, security experts, and civil rights advocates had vowed to fight the government, saying it would use a set of precedent to compel companies to build backdoors into their products. The government had fired back, insisting that Apple was not above the law, and that its request for technical assistance concerned only Farouk's work phone with the San Bernardino Health Department. And then, of course, Evan Greer, campaign director for Fight for the Future, a nonprofit that supports Apple, said Monday's announcement was proof the government had an alternative motive in the case. She said in a statement, quote, the FBI's credibility just hit a new low, quote, unquote. They repeatedly lied to the court and the public in pursuit of a dangerous precedent that would have made all of us less safe. Fortunately, internet users mobilized quickly and powerfully to educate the public about the dangers of backdoors, and together we forced the government to back down. All right. A recent editorial, the Wall Street Journal, also criticized the Justice Department's legal battle as reckless and said the FBI has, quote, fibbed by saying the Apple case is about one phone. Well, there you go. Well, if it was about one phone, then why'd they drop the case? Apparently, the way they dropped the case about the one phone is that it was about one phone, right? Okay, you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. How is everybody doing out there today? 530-265-9555, if you'd like to call in. If you're listening to the show live, with the advent of more terrorist attacks and craziness, and of course the upcoming elections, I penned an article a long time ago called The Cost of Killing. And with all the talk of terrorism and war once again in the news, I resurrected this article. I wrote this years ago during the U.S. invasion of Iraq. Since it's still applicable today, I present it to you by yours truly, The Cost of Killing. War is usually beyond the scope of Money Matters here, but since it does have an enormous impact on our country's deficit, that opens up fair game for yours truly's take on it. Original Pentagon estimates on the war in Iraq came in at $60 billion. Now, that was a long time ago. It's a lot higher if you add in the additional years and, of course, Afghanistan. Years later, we have a bill totaling about 8,000% higher, probably even higher now, with costs coming in at over $1 trillion. Not including our other countless excursions into other God-forsaken places. With the latest number of Iraqis killed, estimated back then, a few years back, by British Medical Journal, put at 700,000. That works out to about the cost of $8 million per kill. As Bill Bonner of Financial Sense says, you have to wonder why American would want to kill even a single Iraqi, let alone at the cost of $8 million apiece. That's a great line from Bill Bonner. Estimated at a cost of about $10 trillion for carrying out World War II, each grave filled back then only cost about $200,000 per kill. Given we supposedly got much more efficient at killing people, using all these advanced weapon systems, how come the cost of offing somebody went up by a staggering 2,000%? Bill Bonner might be onto something here. As we supposedly get more efficient at killing, it costs us more to carry one out. An odd query for those looking up to Pentagon budget balance sheets even more. Really, they say these new machines and new war efforts are better at killing people, but it's costing more to kill. Seems to me, if we want to continue to kill people, we could just make it cheaper by doing away with all these high-tech weapon systems and just run over there and knife someone. Osama bin Laden figured that one out. And with a little over $500,000 in costs, he brought down the Twin Towers and killed a few thousand people there. At a much lower cost per unfortunate death. But in doing so, he caused the U.S. to spend literally trillions of its wealth to knock off a few unfortunates who happened to be in the wrong minivan somewhere on some road, probably in the desert, spotted by a drone piloted by a Snicker bar-eating young man or woman. Although Osama himself is now enjoying his tribe of virgins, supposedly, his legacy lives on in the ever-increasing deficits in the United States. Pentagon budgets growing ever larger with each new desert we deem necessary to occupy. Bang for your buck, I guess you call it. And Osama bin Laden got a lot of it for his money, while we just keep getting more efficient in spending more of our money per death than any empire before us. I knew getting better at growing apples and getting better at making cars would make for cheaper cars and more apples. But you have to wonder what's the point of getting better weapons if they end up costing us more to have them do their ungodly work. Seems like the better we supposedly get at killing, the more it costs us. And I don't think that's the way it's supposed to go, economically speaking. And of course, needless to say, efficient killing certainly hurts on the receiving end, wouldn't you say? I concluded the article by saying, and now I'm running out of space on my paper, so I have to ask myself, what's the point of this news article anyway? Well, probably as much as the whole point of waging wars everywhere, which is to say there's not much sense to be made out of any of it. You're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back.
Candy off my mouth. Maybe I'll leave.
All right, here comes a great guitar run right here. You know, those 80 bands, you know, those poof hairdo bands, they had some great guitars back then, you know what I mean? Smoking, for sure. So, yeah, we got some good news and bad news for you out from Yahoo, April 6th. Get ready to pay more for gas by Memorial Day. And, gas prices are on the march. During March, gas prices increased for 21 consecutive days. Whoa. Starting at $1.86 a gallon and reaching $2.04 by March 28th. And it doesn't look like the climb will stop there. AAA, the automotive people, predicts that the average price of a gallon of gas could rise 25 cents by Memorial Day. What's up all the recent headlines about the oversupply of oil in the global market? Why are gas prices projected to go up? One reason, so says the article, is that refineries have until June 1st to start selling a special summer blend gasoline. This gas is mandated by the Environmental Protection Agency and is less likely to contribute to air pollution during warmer temperatures. In response, refineries are expected to lower their supply of regular gas at a time when more drivers hit the road to enjoy the warmer weather. The result? Higher gas prices at the pump. If you get pump paranoia, so they say in this article, there are some silver linings. The good news is at the beginning of April, gas prices were at the same level they were in 2009. How's that to help your wallet? Sure, gas is a few more cents expensive than it was in January, but at the current national average of $2.06 a gallon, drivers are saving 34 cents per gallon compared to April 2015. That's pretty good. I was over in down to Southern California and then over to Arizona. And I ran across a gas station and paid $1.86 for regular. Holy mackerel. $1.86. I couldn't believe it. And currently, California has the most expensive gas. Go figure. At $2.79 a gallon. Hawaii's $2.60. Nevada $2.45. Washington $2.45. And Alaska $2.27. You know, we have all the a lot of refineries here just going under Pinole and down by Walnut Creek up there, all sorts of refineries. Why are we paying the most? In Hawaii, don't they have to ship it over there? They pay less than I do. Something odd about that. I once asked a gas executive why, and they said supply and demand. Not quite sure what that meant. There's less demand in Hawaii? Or Washington? In California? Don't know. Refineries are here. I think the shipping costs would probably increase it, but guess not. 2015, AAA said the average driver paid $5.65 a year on gas. All right. $5.65 for the year. I think I pay more than that. Do you? Anyway, if you're planning to take a trip this spring or Memorial weekend, you can expect higher gas prices, but it will be nowhere near what we've seen in previous years. And they conclude the article, I mentioned this before, to set a road trip budget, download an app like Gas Buddy, and that will help you monitor gas prices around the U.S. and pick the lowest station in your area. The application will identify stations with the cheapest gas, and it even has a trip cost calculator so you can predict how much gas will cost for your entire trip. Out from Yahoo Finance by Brittany Jones Cooper, April 6th, called Get Ready to Pay More for Gas for Memorial Day. And you're listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. We'll be right back with another interesting market observation. On your community radio station, show 230, titled The Cost of Everything. My name's Mark Cunaberti, your host for today. So let's take a look at the Dow on Thursday, April 7th. We'll see where we sit. It was down 221 earlier when I started the show, and now it is down 173, so coming back a little bit here. Market risk is a name used in investment planning to describe the possibilities of stock going down. Not from individual company news, but because the overall market goes down. Since most stocks do move in concert with each other, and at other times, at times of extreme volatility, both up and down, market risk is thought to be an unavoidable risk if one owns stocks. These inherent risks in markets, besides market risk, run the gamut from political risk, government or political events affecting markets, to black swan events, unforeseen occurrences such as 9/11 and other events, like tsunamis. The main point with inherent or unavoidable risks is there's little anyone can do to prepare for them. Not all stocks, however, move in the exact direction of the overall market, and some stocks have a tendency to move in the opposite direction. To illustrate this, one only has to look at certain sectors of stocks during market falls and see if they indeed moved in the same direction or moved in the opposite direction or perhaps didn't move at all. When what is called a risk-on environment, that's what they call it, risk-on, it is perceived by investors that the waters are safe and it is okay to buy stocks. So when you hear on the news, a risk-on environment, perceived as safe investing environment. This is typical when the economic environment is perceived as normal and healthy, and investor concerns around the world are placid and calm. The opposite of risk on is risk off. A risk off environment is when investors are nervous about what is happening around them. During risk off periods, investors tend to flee most stock sectors and buy assets considered defensive or perceived as safer than the general stock market. These areas might include bonds or preferred stocks, things we typically call fixed income investments, utility sectors, foodstuffs and staple consumer staple sectors, government investments such as T-bills, treasuries or other government-issued debt, government-backed mortgage securities, and other particular investments thought to be more stable in times of market duress. True to form, some of these sectors did rise during the January 2016 sell-off. Although there are other investments that are actually designed to rise in market sell-offs, such as bear funds or short funds, these investments can be of a risk type of investment anyway, because they may fall if the markets rise. A diversified portfolio may hold both risk-on and risk-off types of investments in order to participate in rising markets, yet offer some degree of safety in a falling market. A dynamic strategy, a moving strategy, will attempt to move in and out of assets depending on market conditions. A dynamic strategy is possible, but timing can be difficult. Many investors tried to time market movements only to be burned. And when markets move in the opposite direction, balances can fall. To ensure that your portfolio is diversified and spread out, you might research what sectors and assets tended to rise during previous market upsets and which sectors just mirrored the movements of the markets. Although past performance is never a guarantee as to future movements, we have to say that, certain actions and reactions in markets tend to repeat themselves when you observe them over a long time period. And history can be a guide as to where to look for risk-on and risk-off areas to park your money. Of course, always consult with your qualified investment professional when considering any investment and do your own research before investing. Since there are always degrees of good, better, and best in all areas of human expertise, realize that there are also strategies which may smooth out market movements if one knows where to look. And that's the key, isn't it? And we're going to be taking a look at the market. You're listening to show 230, The Cost of Everything. The show is called Money Matters. My name is Mark Cunabrutti. I've hosted it since 2005. And we come on usually twice a month. The market's really rock and roll, maybe a little bit more. And we do newscasts on a variety of stations as well, 2 or 3 minute newscasts, keep you up to date. And newsletter is available. And yeah. So the Dow, let's check on the Dow as we come to the close of the show and the market. And the Dow is now down 191 at 17,524. 17,524. Gold at 1242. And we'll get a current read on gold here. And gold's now sitting up 1860 at 1240. It's lost 20% in the last 30 days, gold has, but has gone up 38.7% in the last 1 year. That according to Kitco.com. So we'll be right back to conclude the show. I had to play that guitar run again from Warrant. It's just bad. Blank. And you have been listening to Money Matters on your community radio station. How is everybody doing? Hope you enjoyed the show. Show 230, The Cost of Everything. On your community radio station, Money Matters. Feel free to send us an email at the program director at your station. And you can find that on the website of whatever community station you're hearing the show on. And they'll forward it on to me. And, yeah, we'll watch the markets for you so you don't have to. Remember, discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. I am an investment advisor representative through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. The views expressed on Money Matters are my opinions only and the opinions of my guests and fellow writers. They may not necessarily reflect those of Cambridge, this station, its staff, members, or underwriters. God bless you. Have a great day. Keep it where you got it. And stay frosty.